Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 for postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. And now a brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706-399-5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, good evening. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Booker T. Washington African American Family Room Forum. This is your host, Marshall Washington Cabinet Sabui, and we welcome everyone who has joined us tonight, those on our regular panel and those who are listening via the internet. We are certainly happy to have you in our virtual family room tonight. And before we go any further, I want to do a radio check with our co-host, Mr. Bianchi. We welcome you, and how are you able to hear us tonight?
Yeah, you sound very well.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We also want to welcome our other panelists that have joined us so far, Sheikh John Kennebay and Brother Warren, and we're expecting others to join us in a little while, hopefully. But we do want to invite all of you who are listening via the internet to come on board in our virtual family room here in cyberspace, and let's hear your opinions about whatever's on your mind that you would like to talk about. Now, we will begin with a particular topic, but we don't have to stay on this topic. In fact, we encourage you to speak your mind. If there's something that's really heavy on your mind, you want an audience for it, we are an audience for you to be able to project your thoughts to, and we welcome your opinions and your thoughts. So the topic that we've chosen for this week, based on what's been prominent in the news and the national news, is this particular topic, which I will read or I will say or state. Congressional political parties, there are two political parties represented in the Congress of the United States, in the House of Representatives, and in the Senate, and they are the Republican Party and the Democrat Party. And the congressional parties are divided on the need for a bipartisan congressional commission, a bipartisan congressional commission to investigate the January 6th insurrection. Law enforcement officers at the federal level, Homeland Security, FBI, and others have actually termed this, what we saw, many of us saw on television on the 6th of January, as an insurrection. So congressional parties are divided on the need for a bipartisan, meaning comprised of members of both of these political parties, bipartisan congressional commission to investigate the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, that's in Washington, of course, we know that, on January 6th, 2021. What is your... Now, before we begin, we'll begin with our co-host and go around the virtual family room. I want to give the number to our audience listening via the internet in case you would like to call in, and we encourage you to call in. The number is 657-383-0671. That's 657-383-0671, and I do plan to repeat that in a few minutes because we definitely encourage you to call in if you're listening and let us hear your opinion on this topic or anything else that's on your mind. But anyway, I just want to begin before I bring on Mr. Bianchi by saying that one of the events that is seared into our memory happened on September 11th, 2001, commonly known as 9/11, when America was attacked by foreign agents, terrorists from overseas. And, of course, I don't have to explain what the attack looked like. Many of us saw it on TV. Some people may have seen it in live color as it was happening. But we mostly did all get a chance to see the replay of those two planes crashing into the World Trade Center, the two Twin Towers. What we probably did not see, because it was not played as much as the attack on the Twin Towers was another plane crashing into the Pentagon. And then another plane, which was, according to the information I received, headed for the White House, to crash into the White House, was diverted because some heroes on that plane were able to basically subvert intention landing or crashing of that plane into the White House, and it crashed in Pennsylvania somewhere. But this shocked America, traumatized America for weeks and even months and even years. But immediately following that, there was a bipartisan commission that was established to investigate, thoroughly investigate this particular incident. And the reason why it was so important to do that was to develop a strategy in terms of building up our intelligence, you know, in terms of military-type intelligence or CIA-type intelligence and other defenses, so that our air, you know, oversight protections, so that would never happen ever again. Now, in my personal opinion, I'm going to give up the mic in just a second. The next most egregious act against the United States government, the people of the United States, represented by our congressional and senatorial representatives, was what happened on January the 6th. And there's great opposition on the part of the Republicans in the Congress, with the exception of a very few, to having a similar kind of investigative commission to look at that situation and develop strategies to keep that from ever happening again. I won't give my opinion on it right now. I just wanted to lay it out, begin by bringing on our co-host, Ms. Pianca. What do you think?
Well, I'm not too concerned about that myself, but I do wonder, I have two questions. Who was the person that shot the woman and killed her? Why come their name is not being revealed? And who ordered all those porter toilets that was outside there in the vicinity of the steps? It must have been about three dozen of them or more. Now, the reason I ask about them, that had to be planned. You just don't call up one day and tell them to bring them out the next day. There's a time frame when they are delivered before or ordered before the event that's needed. That's one of the questions that's asked in application for staging a demonstration or a gathering on the mall. They're concerned about the number, and that there's plenty of porter powers, I should say, porter toilets, so that people can use the restroom if they so need it. Those are my two questions. And congratulations to all graduates that are graduating this past week around the country. I'll talk about that later.
But thank you, and I certainly underscore your congratulations to all of all levels. We certainly appreciate you extending that congratulations, and I'm sure that any students and parents and relatives and friends of any graduates that are listening appreciate you giving that great shout out to the graduates. So maybe someone on the panel, I don't have the answer to your questions, but maybe someone on the panel or someone who is listening via the internet has the answers, and they will call in and answer your questions. But we'll move right around the circle of the family room to Sheikh John Kenan Bey. You've heard the topic. You heard our co-host, Ms. Bianca's response, questions. So what is your opinion? What do you think?
First of all, I'd like to say good afternoon, good evening to everyone. And I think the challenge to democracy as acceptance and practice in the United States of America seem to be under threat at different times. And the stability of democracy seem to have been challenged internally in that last elections. So in the election, the participation in the democracy process was very, very high. However, there were elements that I think add the instability to the extent that the representative of the government and the House Senate representative was threatened to the point of some of their lives was threatened. Or I think that's a serious situation. I don't think it's taken as seriously as it should be by some of the citizens in the country in a divided way, wherein this country is very, very divided, and that doesn't strengthen the country. It's weakened it. So if there are external forces, enemies, to an extent, they are happy that their work is being done internally by the citizens of this United States of America. If you don't see that as a need to address and repair that and bring about unity, I think that the era of letting the seeds of division would continue to soar. So I think it's something. It's a very serious situation. I don't think it's seen serious by some of the citizens of this country. That's the way I see it. And I think that once I think it looked at that way, the halls of Congress, or the representative in the Senate, and in the House will be more unity. They'll work together to address some of the problems in a rational way. The way they approach now, they are not rational. They they're not rational. I won't say anything else about my opinion of what in the minds of the people who seem to be for more division than they are for unity and moving forward. That's my opinion. I see it. Peace.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to bring on Brother Warren in just a second, but I do want to make a quick comment. You know, as an historian, as the professor of history at the university here in Augusta, Georgia, and I also teach history in a statewide program online for the University System of Georgia, and world history and U.S. history are the areas that I specialize in. And in studying world history, it's very important for me to be able to understand that societies and governments are not permanent fixtures on the world stage. For one example, Yugoslavia. When I was a child, Yugoslavia was an ally of the Soviet Union, although they had established their separatism from the dictatorial regime of Joseph Stalin, and Marshal Tito had pretty much broken away from the rigid arm of Stalin. However, he was a dictator that had many of the same strong arm policies in Yugoslavia that Stalin had in the communist bloc. But there's no nation of Yugoslavia anymore. It was broken up in the 90s in the Balkan War because of divisions among the people, the Bosnian and the Serbian people, Armenian people, and Albanian people. All of these people that were part of that world wanted to establish their own personal or societal independence. And so the national hegemony that had occurred when the communist dictator was alive disappeared. So there's no guarantee that this government known as the United States of America is going to be around 50 years or 100 years from now. It depends on a lot of factors. This is a very fragile democracy, as was proven beyond the shadow of a doubt between 1861 and 1865, when a number of the states, I think it was 13, decided they didn't want to participate in this experiment in federalist democracy anymore for various reasons. Now we have what appears to be the beginning of a unraveling of the ball of yarn, so to speak, tightly wound ball of yarn until recently. And we can only hope that the unraveling stops, but the trend is moving at a rather aggressive and rapid pace towards the unraveling of this, because there are those people that don't believe that this democratic form of government is as good as an autocratic form of government that supports the concepts and the ideas of the society that they have. And so these people invaded. You know, they didn't go there as tourists, you know, getting checked at the doors and, you know, having somebody escort them on tours or walking through there, you know, with the intention of just observing, you know, the different house. I've been to both the House of Representatives and the Senate, and it was very quiet, serene, and peaceful. I walked in. In those days, you didn't have to have prior clearance. You just signed the guest book if you wanted to, and you just proceeded to go where you wanted to go that was open to the public. So I went in the gallery of both the House of Representatives and the Senate. But my intention was not to cause any kind of distractions and upheavals and to desecrate these sacred halls, unlike what appeared on TV on the 6th of January. So this undermining of our respect for this citadel of democracy, in my opinion, foreshadows an undermining of our respect for our democratic institutions and our democratic society. So we'll move on now to Brother Warren. Brother Warren, you've heard a little soliloquy from me, and you heard Mr. Bianca, and you heard Sheikh John Kenan Bay, but what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's all political, and that is the Republican congresspersons and senators understand that if they do not support the lies of Trump, they will lose a lot of their constituencies, and their constituents will not go vote. And that's all this is. It's everybody knows what happened was the most atrocious thing that they say could happen to them. And I think African-American people have to learn lessons on how white people supposedly disagree with each other. They always have these gentlemen's agreement behind closed doors. And sometimes we really get hung on Democrat or Republican, and we really become fundamentalists on these things. And the white folks, really, as long as the business class, the elite class is not suffering, they don't give a damn what happens. But in this case, you have a lot of the white people who vote Republican have created a mythology of Trump as some sort of god, and that anybody who goes against what he says, they want to get their anger on them, not only at the polls, but even threatening their lives. And that's why it looks like maybe the government may attempt to ultimately you know, have Trump arrested on some sort of illegalities in his past, business dealings or whatever, because they recognize they have to kill his what you call martyr-like status or you know, mythological image. What's happening in the American landscape is partially a reaction to demographic shift in the country. The white people in a few decades will not be the numerical majority in the United States. And so there, the whites, the working class whites, the middle class whites, some of the wealthy whites, are, they feel they're fighting a battle for their survival. And so Trump comes in and he gives them this comfort. And all of this QAnon stuff, this conspiracy theory stuff that they participate in, that they've been doing, harassing people, is really the white racist sentiment that they have to conceal behind all of it. Because what they really want to come out and say, we don't want no niggas killed. They really want to say all of that, but they have convinced themselves they can't do it that way anymore. And I find it very hypocritical that they express support for law enforcement, but all of a sudden there's silence on the attack and the trauma that the law enforcement officers, Capitol Police, have gone through. Now, so as I said, is these Republican politicians are afraid of their constituents, and they're afraid for their lives. Many of them actually afraid for their lives. And so that's what this is. And I want to say congratulations to all the black people who changed their name from a European name to an African name, but stay loyal to their African self. They stay loyal to African principles of community development. They stay loyal to African-centered principles. When they want to start a school, I say congratulations to those blacks, because we have a lot of people out here who are phonies and charlatans. And there's no way, Mr. Washington, can an African-American have an African name and discourage people about Africa and say that they participate in creating African-centered schools, but yet come on the other hand, that's a psychotic, confused, mentally disturbed person. So I say congratulations to all of those black people who stay true and loyal to their true selves, for you will have peace in the end. Thank you, Mr. Washington.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And we're going to bring on next my friend, my fraternity brother, my mentor, Dr. Calvin Novus. But before we bring Dr. Novus on, I want to say something about what you just commented on, and try to make it brief as possible. But when I was born, because my father has, well, he's passed now, but because he had a French name, I was given a French name, you know, because I was named as a junior, exactly the same name as my father. My last name, according to my birth certificate, is Cabinet, which is from France, from a village called Cabana on the southern part of France. I've never been there, but I've read about it in history. And this name was passed on to my family because my great-grandfather's daddy, a white slave owner, was named Cabanas. And he mated with a black woman. I've been told that she was actually what we call a black Indian from the mountains up around Shelby, North Carolina. And he had a wife, but he loved this black Indian woman. And I don't know her name. I've done some extensive research trying to find her name. But ironically, on my great-grandfather's birth certificate, it doesn't name either his mother or his father, which is very strange. So I wasn't able to get that information. I'm still trying to get it. But the fact of it is that Mr. Cabanas, who was my great-grandfather's father, treat his son as a slave. He gave him part of his estate has an inheritance when he died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, generous enough to include him in his will, and even for some years, his son, whose name was Vance Gavanis, lived with the family, not as a servant, not as a slave, but as a member of the family. However, still, because of the fact that that name still represents a society where people were enslaved. I don't know about Mr. Cabanis, my great-great-grandfather, the white Frenchman, and the rest of his, you know, situation as far as slaves are concerned. I'm sure that some of his relatives, because he came from a very large and powerful family. Some of you may have heard of Cavendish Tobacco, which is a famous brand of tobacco, or the company was famous, you know, at some point in Virginia. Well, these Cabanis or Cabanises or Cavendishes, all the same family, accumulated a lot of power through the tobacco industry and a lot of wealth. And I would not doubt at all that since they were raised tobacco that they had slaves. So, you know, I have to use the name Cabanis in my legal dealings because that's on my birth certificate, and I didn't want to offend my father by legally changing my name, but I adopted the name Abui, which is not a traditional African name, but a friend of mine who is a Nigerian said it is actually an African name, which Muslims at one point in African history, some did use that name, and it means a fatherly person, and that's my professional last name. And I'm only saying that to say I've traveled to Africa several times and have a lot of very close personal friends who I've met through the years, you know, from different parts of Africa, West Africa, North Africa, East Africa, South Africa even, but mostly from West Africa. And but I've met friends actually having visited Africa. And Africa is not a monolithic world. It's a continent. Just like Asia is a continent. You have China on the continent of Asia, but you also have Vietnam on the continent of Asia. Okay? You have Korea on the continent of Asia, et cetera, et cetera. Each one of these, even though it's all on the same continent, they're individual worlds of people, their individual cultures and societies. There may be some similarities in their languages, some similarities in the way they look, but they're different. The same thing is true of Africa. There's no certain African people, so to speak. You can go to Africa and find people in Egypt that look exactly like me, which a lot of people think I look like a white person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I've been to Egypt, and I've been mistaken for an Egyptian. But it's the same. You can go to other parts of Africa, and you can find people that look like my wife, who is a mellow copper, cinema color, I call it. You can find in some families. I have an African family, a friend, a couple that has children, and one of the children, one of the sons, is very dark. One of the daughters is an albino. They have no color. And then they have various shades in between. So I think that this concept of Africanism as an identity is mistaken. And you know, because I'm a Muslim, you know, I would prefer if I didn't know about some of the downsides of what some of the Arab Muslims had done to the African people, including African Muslims, I would promote the idea that being a unifying force, but under the present conditions, I can't say that. So I don't really know, you know, what it is right now, I'll be honest, that can unify people that came from many different parts of Africa. They weren't unified before they were brought to America, are not unified now, except in the fact that we're subjects, you know, of 400 years of oppression. But I think it's a very interesting topic that we can discuss in the future. So at this time,
I want to make one statement, Mr. Washington.
Yeah.
Remember, during the slave trade, all of those different Africans, when they got to North America, used that word African as a unifier given their different language and ethnic groups. And they created institutions like the AME Church, the AME Zion Church, the African Free Schools. They used that. So they were far thinking than we are today. They understood that in the eyes of the powers of the world at that time, they were all looked upon as the same, as property to be exploited and to be made money off of. So they were far thinking in terms of organizing, even though they knew that they had different language groups they came from. So they were far ahead of their time.
You're right, and I do agree with you, and I'm not going to take any time away from Dr. Novus, but I'll certainly underscore and concur with what you just said. You're absolutely correct, and thank you for that assertion. Thank you. So my friend, my frat brother, my mentor, and I can name other accolades I'll give him, my pilot, he's the only individual in my life other than a commercial pilot that I have allowed to take me. I don't know how high we were up in the sky, but I know we were at least probably 10,000 feet up in the sky to take me flying on a couple of occasions, and I trust him with my life. Dr. Novus, how are you this evening? Welcome to the show, and what do you think?
Hey, Brother Cabinets, and all the other gentlemen and all the other ladies on the line tonight, thank you. I want to pivot a little bit. You know, there's something that didn't sit well with me last week when we addressed the critical race theory. It came up, and that didn't sit well with me because I've looked at the critical race theory in the past, but this week I really explored the critical race theory, and I would tell you it's simply that, a theory where you look at institutions and practices through the lens of racism. It's simply that. And for organizations to be offended by that illustrates the simplistic mindset that we have in a very complex and complicated nation. And the critical race theory, to me, is an element that people use to highlight wrongdoing based on race. And if we want to eliminate the use of the critical race theory, it really doesn't make sense. I can understand why some people want to do it, but to me it's another step towards really evading having the tough discussions like I mentioned last week around racism in this country, especially through the periods of slavery. For some reason, we want to polish over that and make it as clean and neat so certain people can feel like it really didn't happen and that the effects of that and the impacts of that are not systemic. And they really are. And it's bothersome to me that people think that you could erase certain things. And we don't, for instance, it also bothers me that even every level of education, we always study European history. I don't know why, we just do. And I'm like, we don't even understand our own history, but we're constantly studying European history. It is really time for us to focus on the history of our nation and understand it thoroughly and understand who played the critical roles of it, really understand what happened in those periods. Because when you understand history, you understand it through eras and through different periods. And we really need to understand that. And there's no, I mean, we all understand, we all know that slavery was by as barbaric as you can get. But we want to talk about it. I want us to talk about it in terms of what happened in this country, and what the slaves did for this country. But we never want to talk about that. We always want to go back to study European history. You know, I hated the fact when I was in high school I had to study Western civilization. I'd rather just study the history of this country. Now, I know that may seem a little closed-minded, but I know it's important to understand world history as well, because we need to understand the evolution of certain things and how things unfolded. But before we can study many other things, we really need to focus on our own history, because we don't have it. And I know school districts can define whatever they want to define for their students to study, and that's why it's so critical for us as Afro-Americans to tell the narrative of slavery. Because if we let other races tell it, it's not told in totality. It is not, and the brutal and the horrific details are left out. The mixing of races during slavery, the things that happen, we can't change that. But we need to know that. How the same slave master could just absolutely be so brutal towards slaves, but find his way to female slaves' rooms at night. Those things don't go away. They don't wash away. I don't care what we do. Those stories can't go away. We need to hold that narrative. It's so important that we hold the narrative, because those things that happened during slavery are coming back, and we're seeing some of those things now, the fallout of those things. And that's why I think it's so important. And that's why when I hear politicians and other people say the critical race theory adds no value, it shows you how uneducated they are on the critical race theory. You can take it out of the school system. You can do whatever you want to do. But guess what? The truth of the matter is that the truth is racial discrimination still happens in this country. Every day. And I hear people say, well, this country can't be racist because we had a black president. And I always like to correct people and say, let me correct you on President Barack Obama. He was just as much white as he was black. I don't understand how you can have a white parent and a black parent, and we say he was the first black president of the United States. To me, the correct way to say that, he was the first biracial president of this country with an African descent. We need to be more correct in how we say things, because a lot of people want to vilify him just because of the color of his skin. And so that's why I think it's so important for us to really understand what we're co-signing for when we say things like remove the critical race theory. How can you remove – this is the other question I have. How can you remove the critical race theory, but yet organizations are pushing for diversity, equity, and inclusion? You wouldn't need to push for diversity, equity, and inclusion if we come to natural terms and accept that there still are racial practices in every facet of our life. It doesn't make sense to me. And as a researcher, the one thing that we have to hold on to, that we look for in every research effort we take, that's truth. We need facts to find truth. And so for an organization to say we have no racial issues, we know that's a lie. It's been proven time and time again. We have something now called academic redlining. That is where banks, and I know one in particular, and I know others are doing it too, where if a student is going to school at a community college or a HBCU, and that student take out a $20,000 loan, that student that goes to a HBCU or a community college is going to pay $1,500 more over the life of that loan than a student going to a publicly white institution. That's academic redlining. And we wonder why critical race theory exists. It's because of practices like that. Just how we've seen recently. It was in the social media. It was in the news. A black lady had a house appraised 3 times, got 3 different values. The last final time, she had a white lady stand there, house doubling in value. And you wonder why the critical race theory exists. There's too many racial practices and violations that we see on a daily basis for anybody to say that racial, that the critical race theory is not important. And with that, I close.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nobles, and I'm not going to give another speech, but you definitely generated a lot of response in me, but I'm going to go ahead and pass the baton over to my dearly beloved sister-in-law, Sister Stephanie, this time. Stephanie, I don't know if you are familiar with the topic that we had begun to discuss, but the topic is an open topic in that you can discuss this or you can discuss something else on your mind. But what we had actually started talking about was the fact that the congressional political parties are divided on the need for a bipartisan congressional commission to investigate the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021. What is your opinion? Now, before you come on to give me your opinion, I do want to make this quick comment. Scholars, politicians, and people in the public media, in order to be able to communicate to people that are of like mind, established terminology. And this is done definitely in the legal profession. This is done in the arts. This is done surely in academia and politics. So recently, because it's not something that I was ever told about when I was growing up, when I was a 17, 18, 20-year-old, 22, 23-year-old, 24-year-old university student. But now they're talking about critical race theory, and I'm still getting a handle on it. But one thing that I do know, and I definitely have to strongly concur with Dr. Nobles, and that's the fact that we need to know, not just the African Americans, but Americans need to know the truth about what has occurred in the context of American history, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because as a great philosopher by the name of George Santana said, that those that do not understand their history or know their history are doomed to repeat it. He wasn't the one that invented it. I'm sure that some classical scholar years and years and years before he was born came up with that concept. But it's true that slavery as it existed from 1600s, some people say it didn't really start legally in 1619, and be that as it may, but it legally ended after the Civil War around the 1865-1867 time frame with the adoption of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. But there was a loophole that was allowed to remain in the Constitution that says, except for conviction of a crime, you can still be enslaved. That's in the Constitution of the United States. But the fact of it is that there are those people, and I'm studying for a doctorate in domestic counterterrorism, and there are those people that would like to reduce the African-American people back to, maybe you won't call it chattel slavery, but virtual slavery. You know, whether that they are put on slave plantations, on industrial factories like the Germans put many of the Europeans, including especially the Jews, during their regime. You know, and there are those people that would like to do that. They would like to take everybody that's drawing a welfare check. And I won't say everybody black that's drawing a welfare check. And put them in a form of forced labor. You know, and really almost virtual slavery. So this critical race theory, which I'm not very, very familiar about, I've got to get more educated about it. Part of it is to bring out the truth about the fact that race has played a very important part in the oppression of tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of people, just because the people are of African descent, only because the people are of African descent. And as Dr. Noble stated very, very clearly, this is this systemic and it's still continuing. Can get worse. And it will get worse if some people have their way. So I'm going to turn it over now to Sister Stephanie. Sister Stephanie, thank you for being patient with me. I know you've been waiting to come on. And so I'm giving the mic to you. What do you think?
Hi, thank you for having me on here. Hello, everyone. I hope everyone's having a nice evening. First of all, I'd like to say I probably won't get to stay on long. My phone is going to die. I apologize for that. Secondly, I'd like to say I am in such total agreement with you and Dr. Noble. You know, we just can't take a giant eraser and start erasing our history, our past, because someone doesn't like it. You know, I'm also proud to say that live and let live and continue to teach our young people. You know, I have done work in elementary schools in Virginia, California, and North Carolina. Hands-on, I work with students who are trying to be left behind, you know, try to bring their grades back up, one-on-one a lot of times. Before doing all that, that's how I was with my own son at home, at the table, one-on-one, which gave him such a big jump start with his education. And it carried him through a long way like that. He surpassed me at a certain age because he was really into it. But no, we can't erase our history. I think it should be taught. I was real happy to see one little girl I work with in our family out in California. I think she was a second grader. I'd sit at the table with her and do school work with her. And she's a second grader. She had to do a history report during Black History Month. And anyway, she told me, I told her, I don't know how we got on the subject, did you know that President Washington, was it Washington, had wooden teeth? She said, no, Auntie. She said, those weren't wooden teeth. I said, yes, they were. And that's been the history ever since I've known. She said, no. You remember how they used to open the slave's mouth and look at their teeth, examining inside their mouth? She said that's because they would take their teeth and make a set of teeth out of the slave's teeth. I say, go ahead on, girl, because I never knew that. But these kids are learning. These kids are smart. They're bright. You just got to latch on to them and help them along the way. You know, maybe my phone will last a little bit through this show. I'm hoping so. But Dr. Noble, you was on point. Everything you said, thank you very much. And thank you to my brother, Muhammad. You was on point, too. Okay, well, everyone have a nice day. And thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam. Well, I want to give a shout out at this time to my wife, my dear beloved wife, Jacqueline Abua, Supergirl, I call her, because she can't hear me. She's in another room. but she'll probably learn about this later. But she did something so unusual today that it just totally blew my mind. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but it's just something I have to say. But we're decorating in the front of our beautiful home that God has blessed us to have had for the last 8 years. And we're just getting around to doing some of the landscaping, some of the decoration that we had dreamed of doing. And part of it is building a granite rock chip garden in the front, along with other plants. And yesterday we went out and bought about 20 bags of rocks, 20-pound bags of rocks. And so she loves her truck that I helped her to buy, and she noticed that the tires were looking like they were getting flat because of this weight, this extra 400 pounds of weight on the back in the bed of the truck. And she was determined she wasn't going to leave it there overnight. And I told her that I would get the rocks off the back of the truck, but I was going to do it a few bags at a time. I wasn't going to try to get all 400 pounds off at one time. And so I got involved last night in some other business. So this morning I went out there to begin the process of clearing the bags off the truck, and I saw the bags had been all removed and were stacked neatly on the side of the garage.
Wow.
And I said to her, well, first of all, a neighbor was walking down the street, and I've got some really good neighbors. And I said to him, I said, do you know, I said, did you move the bags off the truck for me? He said, no. He said, I don't know anything about it. I said, well, maybe it's somebody else. And so I was going to ask the other neighbors that are close to me. You know, we all get along very well and help each other. But they hadn't come outside yet. So I went inside and said, Jackie, I said, guess what? I said, somebody did us a tremendous favor. They took all of those bags, those 20 bags of rocks, heavy rocks, off of the truck and stacked them up neatly. And she just kind of didn't say anything. And then after a few minutes, she raised her arms like, you know, the muscle man, you know, stance, you know, with her fist balled up. She said, your Supergirl did it. I said, golly, I couldn't be. I felt really strong. She did that. But, you know, that just goes to show you, brothers, that we have more going for us than our women than we even can begin to imagine. You know, they're there for us. They're there to take up the slack. And sometimes they get in front of us and lead us. And we should be humble and accept that. And my wife sure gave me a good lesson in endurance today, because I had no idea that that could be done. And she did in less than an hour. And I can only imagine her out there, you know, looking like some of our women were looking back in the old days when they actually were forced to do that kind of stuff. And nobody asked her to do it. She wanted to do it, you know, because she knew it had to be done. So thank you, Jackie. And I don't think you can hear me, so Stephanie, you can tell her what I said tonight about her. So moving on, we're going to finish wrap up going back through the list, but we're going to start with Dr. Novus and then go to the Brother Warren and then Sheikh John Kennebay and end up with the wrap-up, as we always do with our co-host, Mr. Bianchi. So you've heard some more about what we have been talking about, and we've also commented on what you had brought up tonight. So there's a lot.
Mr. Washington.
Yes, sir.
I want to address Mr. Knowles was talking about. Calvin, if it's okay, this will be real quick, because I got to be gone at 8 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock now, too. But Calvin, if you want to discuss that with myself, I'll discuss that with you anytime. I give you my contact, and you can point out to me why you think it's great, and I can point out why I think it's wrong. And, I mean, that's up to you. You know, you talk about that it should be the study of what people's skin other than white done here on America. But your black nationals like to go back to ancient Egypt. And they wanted to put that in schools. Matter of fact, I can name you quite a few schools that have that.
Your name is Bianchi. What's the problem?
Man, would you leave me alone?
Well, you're contradicting yourself.
I'm talking to Mr. Nobles.
You're contradicting yourself. You got an ancient Nile Valley name, so why other people can't refer to it?
Would you let me say, now, Mr. Washington, now, would you mute him?
Okay, Mr. Pierre is getting ready to leave. Let him leave us with whatever statement he wants to make, and then after he leaves, we can stay on for at least another hour because that's when our time is up.
Well, I just want to, I just question that with Mr. Noble, that's all. You can go, I just wanted to question him on what he said. I told him that he can, we can talk about that anytime.
Yes.
And I'll discuss it with him.
Right. Okay, well, that's good that you're offering him that opportunity. I know you said he had to leave. It is that time you said he had to leave. So we're going
to
turn it back.
Well, I got time to go around so I can finish up. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought you had to go at 8. Okay, well, you're going to be
yes,
the wrap-up person. So we're going to go to Dr. Novus, and then we're going to go to Brother Warren. He can make, you know, comments about the issue then, and then with him after he finishes to shake John Kennebay and wrap up with Ms. Bianca. So, Dr. Novus, you explain about the critical race theory. Mr. Pianki has some commentary about it. You can address that, or you can address whatever else you've heard or what you might want to say at this time.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm always open for discussions like that. But what I would like to do is recommend we have a show dedicated to the critical race theory, because I just feel like every few years we have something to have a new look to it. You know, we had affirmative action. We had we had so many other just type of what I call initiatives. And to me, this one here stings a little more, because the people that I hear saying this, mostly let's do this, are Trump supporters. And I'm not knocking them for being Trump supporters, but I know I recognize Trump's game. Trump, it runs a psychological operation campaign, meaning that he likes to control the narrative, whether it's true or not. He put information out. And we know that information is misinformation, and it also have some disinformation in there. And so people have caught on to this narrative of, oh, let's remove the critical race theory. Then why are we so afraid of our own issues in this country around race, but yet we go fight wars in other countries, and we don't have a problem with it? We're trying to tell other countries how to clean up their lives? Are we trying to dictate to them what their government should be doing when we are contradicting our own selves over here? And so that's why, you know, I just feel like, you know, we are no longer the world's police when it comes to racial inequality. We are a laughingstock. We are a clown, because we don't want to address these issues head on. There's just too many instances of situations happening that are damaging the people of color, and we seem to be the only one to care about it, or the only ones to want to raise the issue. I have a good friend of mine. We debate these things all the time, and one of the things we always talk about is, what would you do if the shoe was on the other foot? If we were in control and other ethnic groups wanted to chastise us or address, bring to our attention racial inequalities. And when we talk about it, we talk about those things, because we try to look at these issues holistically. We don't look at these issues from a one-sided perspective. We look at them holistically, because that's what researchers do. I just think that this is so important to, you know, why we are co-signing things that, you know, we think we understand. And I just think there's so much, this problem is much deeper than what we give it credit for. Thank you, Brother Kevin.
I just wanted to say, before we close, if anyone's listening via the internet, and I know we do have people who prefer just to listen, but I want to encourage you to join us before we close out. We've got about another 50 minutes allowable time for this broadcast. We may not take all of that time if the discussion runs out before that, but we want to invite you who have been listening to join us. Let us hear your opinion. We've talked about a couple of things. One is the critical race theory. We also talked about the commission that the House of Representatives has passed a bill to create to investigate the incident at the Capitol, insurrection at the Capitol on 6 January 2021, which the majority of the Republicans in the House voted against, and it appears that almost all of the Republican senators, with the exception of maybe three, and maybe not even that many, are going to vote against. And so we talked about what is your opinion about that. But the thing about it is we want to hear from all of you. So if you'd like to join in this conversation, call 657-383-0671. I'll repeat that, 657-383-0671. And so now we're going to continue to do our wrap-up for the show tonight, and we're going to ask Brother Warren, what do you think now as we begin to wrap up, what is something that you would like to end with today?
Well, first of all, I'd like to state I appreciate this opportunity, Mr. Washington, and I do apologize to you anytime I violated your rules on here, but we all human, we're not perfect. I have a radio show called New Orleans Wake Up. I have shy of 100 episodes. I have over 62,000 listeners. I have people all over the world based off the statistics listen to me, and I get at least 1 to 2 emails weekly from people congratulating me on a particular show that they've listened to. And so as a fellow Blog Talk Radio talk show host, I extend thanks for allowing me to participate. I think one of the issues we have here is a lot of hypocrisy coming from some of these groups who, for critical race theory, are contempt for a January 6th commission. Let me give an example of a hypocrisy. One of the congresspersons from Louisiana, Steve Scalise, the one who was shot at a baseball game a few years ago, but it was Black Capitol Police that saved his life. What an insult he's doing to Capitol Police by participating in a political stunt to save face in front of his racist, unpatriotic supporters because they are Trump worshipers. And I really believe the point is going to come where the powers that be will take Trump down from a legal standpoint with a criminal charge. It's the only way that this system is going to realize is going to have to move forward to break that Trump hold. And watch how these same politicians flip-flop, pretend like they didn't support Trump. Isn't it amazing how Lindsey Graham say one thing one day, come back the next day, say something different? Well, all of these people are doing this hypocritical stuff. On the Blog Talk Radio show, there's a little greasy preacher. He got a little show. And they always talk about education and school choice. He always talks about a school he's going to have. He don't even have no school. And then he has a co-host who's supposed to have millions in the bank. They don't have a school. It's a lot of hypocrisy going on. Again, I brought up the African name issue in my previous commentary. Is how can people have African names and be against teaching African history? How can people have African names and be against Black people identifying with Africa? It's a big hypocrisy is some sort of gender being pushed. And we have to be very perceptive, Mr. Washington, to a lot of people pushing agendas. You have no credibility if you're telling people school choice, they can start a school, but you have no school. I made up a quote. I said, he who has a school, let him cast the first stone. But if he has no school, as Little Richard would say, shut up. So we have these hypocrites around the political environment. You know, you get people that say that they help start schools, they help start Afrocentric schools, then they come right back and criticize Africa. They talk about the American African women, and they come back to my African sacrifice, African. That person has no credibility at all. That person is a laughing stock, a joke. And so this whole issue of the Capitol riot and you shouldn't have a commission is just a political stunt. They're trying to save face in the eyes of their fanatic Trump supporters, who I believe the system will ultimately make a decision to cut ties with him through a criminal investigation, which will lead to a criminal charge, which may or may not lead to a conviction. But the point, once the person has a criminal charge on them, will kind of sully more his name. We're dealing with response to demographic changes in America. There is a concern by many whites that their whiteness won't mean anything. Okay, their whiteness will not allow them to have privilege. And again, if we come across people, and I'm going to say this in closing, if we come across people, ladies and gentlemen, with African names, and they're talking like a Klansman, look at the disynchrony in that. Imagine the image of a guy with a Klan robe and a hood in his hand, and he got an African name, and say he got an African wife, but he's espousing Klan white supremacist rhetoric at the same time. Do we take that Klansman seriously? Is he really a Klansman? Is he an African-centered person? What is he? It's a confused, psychological, tormented, frustrated loser. Thank you, Mr. Washington.
Marshall, can I say something? My phone is going to die.
Yes, sir.
I just want to say I saw on television the other day, you know, they had this white woman up here, and she had a lot of followers because she called herself Mother God. And she claimed that she's been reincarnated over and over. At one point, she was Marilyn Monroe. At another point, she was Jesus and all these other wonderful people. And you know what? She had followers. People who believed in her. Some people are going to believe in anything. You know, Hitler had followers. Jim Jones had followers. You know, the same as Trump. Followers. And so it doesn't matter what kind of nut there are. There's going to be some followers. So we have to use our brain that God gave us and overlook that stuff. It's ridiculous. Thank you. I'm sorry I have to go because my phone is
Thank you so much. Okay, well, thank you so much for your kindness.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome.
Well, excellent. I want to make this comment before we turn over to John Cannon Bay. Brother Warren, I understand from a comment you made a couple of weeks ago that you attended Dillard University. I guess it was called Dillard College. It might have been university then. You know, I want to say this. I've never visited Dillard, but I've always had great respect for Dillard because one of my father's best friends back in the 50s was the football coach of Dillard University's football team. And he visited my home. And I remember him, but I can't remember his name. But he looked like he might have been from part Indian, but he was what I would call a very strong, tough, what I would say hard as flint. You know, flint is the kind of rock to make fire with type of individual. And from what I understand, during his time as the head coach down there, he molded that Dillard football team to be like that. That, you know, among those people in the SIEC football conference, Dillard was one of the most freer teams at that time. And Tuskegee, a tough team at that time, because we had a coach by the name of Arthur Sawyer was the under coach at that time. I can't remember the main coach's name, but Arthur Sawyer was similar to the coach at Dillard, very hard. I mean, they drove those guys. They made those guys, you know, suffer pain. But when they got on the field, all that hard work showed because they were the kind of team that could roll over. If a team wasn't tough and strong, Dillard would roll over them. So I'm saying this as a compliment to you, having gone to Dillard. You seem to have inherited some of that real strong character, some of that toughness, and I commend you. And I definitely commend you for what you're doing with your blog talk show. And I haven't done it, so hopefully one of these times, you know, you can give me the actual, you've said it several times, but give me the actual name again when I can take time to write it down so I can listen. Because as powerful as you have stated that your outreach is, I'd certainly like to be one of your listeners. So thank you. But we'll do that next week, because I want to go ahead and move on. But next week, just remind me to write that.
Next week. Can I ask you, mention, Mr. Washington, there's a number on your board, a 314 number on your board. Would you make sure that Calvin gets that number?
Oh, yeah, okay. That's your number.
You see
I'll
it?
Pass it to him.
Yeah, make sure he get that number and not any other. I'll give it to nobody else because thank you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I will. I'll pass it to him. Let me just go ahead. And I'm taking a picture of it. I'm going to copy it. Wait a minute. Hold on. Just 1 second. Wait a minute. Okay. It disappeared. Let me find
it.
Well,
I put it back up there, but go ahead and finish it.
I see it. Okay. I just wanted to photograph the number. I got it. Okay. I'll give it to him. Okay, so moving right around towards the end, Sheikh John Cannon Bay, certainly you've heard a lot tonight. You've said some very significant points. So would you like to do a wrap-up at this time?
Yes. I would like to say this, is that the Constitution of the United States of America is one of the greatest documents of all times. The other countries look to this Constitution to model theirs. Now, just because it's a great document, it doesn't mean that there's great people in the room at the time it was written. And those people that was in the room that time it was written, their influence is not what people think it was. So when I said the divine influence, I'm saying that the Creator and its angels are working hard to set keep this ship afloat. The Constitution of the United States of America has been stress tested a number of times. The way it's being stress tested now was done similar in the time of McCarthy era. And that passed. And so with this. However, there's new blood and infusion, new blood that is going to be infused into the participant of this great experiment called democracy. And they're going to have more energy of female sisters and energy of people whose gender does not determine the rightness of the policies. It's going to be more broad-based, fair, and it just being challenged at this particular time. So going forward, it will succeed. I just want to make a comment when I said that we can call Remembrance of Aid to some of the people that we said was the father of the writing of the Constitution of the United States of America. Take Thomas Jefferson. He's talking about a document that frees everybody, but yet he has slaves. He has, it's one that said all men are created equal, but has not determined that women are equal to men. Well, actually, they're a little greater than men. They can do some stuff we can't do. They can give you a body that you need to function on the planes and manifest in this physical plane, which men can't do. But I'm saying it took a number of years before the sister had influence on a significant level. As you know, Susan B. Anthony, that was many years after the founding of the Constitution of the United States of America. I just want to say that there are dark periods, but there is light. In fact, after night come day, in the darkest hours just before dawn. So I just want to make those comments. Peace.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sheikh John Kenneth Bay. And now as we begin the last few minutes of the show, we'll turn the mic over to our co-host for the final wrap-up. But before we do, and deference to everyone who's listening via the Internet, this is the opportunity. If you want to add something to the conversation, please call 657-383-0671. If I see your phone number appear on my dashboard, I will extend the show so you can make your comment. And also for our panelists, if you have something that's really pushing you to say it, before I ask Mr. Pianki to close this out, I know that he had to go. Very briefly, could you go ahead and tell me? I don't want anybody to leave dissatisfied that they did not get a chance to get out something that's pressing in them that they want the world, not just the global Internet program. If you have something for the world to hear, please go ahead. Don't be hesitant, but go ahead and take advantage this time to let it out. If anybody wants to say anything this time, please speak, and if not, we'll turn over to Mr. Pianki.
Oh, you mean one of us, Mr. Washington?
Well, yeah, if you got some final quick thing you want to say.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it. Yeah, I'm going to find out who that coach was. I do remember the football, Dillard dismantled that football team about like the mid-60s. And
yeah.
they used to have a football coach. They called him Coach Bird. Coach Bird. But then I think that guy you talked about may have come after Coach Bird. Bird Cruddock was his name. And I have to ask my father. He would remember who that coach was there at Dillard that you may be referring to.
Okay, if you can let me know, because when I listen to you, it makes me think of him, not just because you attended Dillard and he coached at Dillard, but it's just something about the toughness of your character that makes me think of him, because He, from what I can understand, he visited my house one time and stayed there for about 2 or 3 hours drinking and talking to my dad. And just something about him, and then I learned later about that football team that he coached was one of the toughest football teams in the league. And I was just complimenting you. I don't know if Dillard Association created that in you or if there's other reasons, but y'all had that in common. So that's what I brought up. If you can find out his name and let me know, I will.
I'll find out his name there. But in my show is called New Orleans Wake Up. And all you got to do is Google New Orleans Wake Up Blog Talk Radio, and you see many of the fine shows that I've produced. I have guests. That's basically my format. I actually get a foreign guest on various topics as it relates to the African experience there.
Okay. Well, this show, as all of our shows, going back 4 years to being recorded, so later, always, after the show is over, about 15, 20 minutes after the show is over, it's available for me to listen to the whole show, and I do that every night, and even the next day I still listen to it again, because I learned from what everyone on the panel is saying, and I'm being educated, so I will listen. And I will then write down that information, and I will be listening on next week. What day of the week is the show? Is your show?
What I do is usually I would do Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, but whenever I reach out to a guest and that guest is available, so I don't do it religiously every week. But okay. people listen to my previously recorded shows all the time because I see the numbers. The numbers go up all the time. And so I did a show, the last show I did was with a co-founder of the William Leo Hansberry Society. William Leo Hansberry was a professor at Howard. That's a very good show. You should check that out. And she goes into the life of William Leo Hansberry, what he had to endure at Howard. And these are anthropologists and African and African-American anthropologists and archaeologists who created this organization and who are doing various digs and other type of work in that field. Very interesting.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hold on one minute. Somebody just greeted me. Okay, thank you, Brother One. I will definitely be listening. Okay, hold on one second. Somebody just said something that may have just joined us, so let me see who it is, and then we'll give them an opportunity to speak before we wrap up. Okay, I don't see any new numbers on there, so we'll go ahead with our closeout. Ms. Pianchi, our co-host now, will give us our final commentary, and we'll wrap it up for this week's episode. Ms. Pianchi, you've got the mic.
Well, you know, I heard somebody call another preacher a greasy preacher. I was wondering who that would be. You know, it's very, very sad people have to resort to plagiarizing and calling people names, but sometimes that's the only card they have left in their hand to play. But that's all right. That's human nature. But, you know, you made mention earlier about the Pentagon. And after 9/11, and I've engaged in conversations on the theory behind the falling of the 9/11 Twin Towers, and that would be a good discussion, but it has to be with somebody who understands the principles behind the components that was involved. I was in D.C. maybe about a week after the destruction there at the Pentagon. And they were, everything was still pretty much the way it was. But looking around, the narrative that's given about a commercial jet flying at that altitude. Calvin, what size plane did you fly? Or are you doing a Piper? You still on?
No, it was a 707. It was about the same size of a passenger plane.
Are you a commercial pilot?
No, we flew those in the military.
Oh, okay. Well, the thing is this, is that the narrative that 707 or even a 7 series can fly at that altitude, really at height, where you're just snapping off light poles, barely snapping them off, is just seemingly unpractical. Because a commercial jet has to have air up underneath its wings in order to maintain, in order for the flight principles to affect the control services, and you know that yourself. And just from normal pockets of convection, heck, sometimes those planes will drop 200 feet. So unless that plane was flying at supersonic speed and to fly at the altitude, or should I say the height, whereas it's just snapping off light standards and looking at the trajectory, that just did not happen like that. But if you want to engage in a conversation on either that or critical race, get the telephone number from Mr. Washington, we will. And that would be a good conversation too, Mr. Washington. But as I say before, it would be unfair if it's people who don't understand the principle that's behind it. So the other topics, other discussions that you have, people got their opinions, which is okay for them to have. It doesn't mean that it represents the entire ethnic group that they like to refer to. And that's just the point. In my lifetime, I've seen many different theories, ideologies come along from different groups, whether it's the Boy Scouts, whether it's the Church of God in Christ. It's, they're allowed to have those theories. But it's how they play out in real life, and if they do play out in real life, and to what numbers makes a whole difference. In many cases of the time, if you were to form a basis of belief and group them up in a group of people, you would find out that your numbers fall way short of what you expect them to have. And I do give credit to Elijah Muhammad. Elijah Muhammad had a large following in the 50s, at least 250,000. and they done some good things along the lines of economics. Matter of fact, the Nation of Islam was the largest employer of the membership that they catered to during that time in this country. But all that has fell off by the wayside now, as it usually do. What happens to a smaller pseudo-nation usually happens to large nations. They do the same thing. The thing that people should keep in mind is that you're talking about human beings. Human beings do things, no matter what their ethnicity is or no matter what their particular phenotype is. They're human beings. Human beings do things that's considered at the time that they're happening as being good and also being bad. It's a disservice when people in the future look back to the past and is critical of the past, because that's what society agreed upon at that time. It came out one way or the other, and that's society. You can't take morals back into the past and criticize
tell
groups.
People that. Tell Jewish people that about Adolf Hitler and watch what they do to you.
You know, a funny thing
you
make
about
the Germans. The Germans are very highly intelligent people. I have to take my hat off for those that scientists and that was working for them, even though some of them done some precarious things. They must have been very good scientists, because the United States brought about 1,500 of them over to participate and some further developments. And by the way, that was about 22 blacks that participated in one of the major projects at that time that was called the Manhattan Project. Lord Quarterman, there's letters of him corresponding with Einstein, and both agreeing on the subject matter. You had Ernest Wilkinson coming out of Chicago, who graduated from the University of Chicago with a PhD at the age of 17 in mathematics. And quite a few others that participated in different ways, from chemistry, nuclear physics, and so on and so on and so on. You had blacks then in the 1930s that had attained their PhD in advanced degrees in the subject of chemistry, in the subject of physics, in the subject of nuclear theory, and so on and so on. They were so well-versed in their topics that the Department of Defense said, come with us. And that was a good thing that's hardly ever talked about. Hardly ever talked about at all. So with that, Mr. Washington, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pianchi. And I do have to make this comment. Normally I don't follow up with my co-host when he does close out, but being an historian, I have to make this comment. But the History Channel actually speaks, writes about the attack on the Pentagon on 9/11, and it says that American Airlines Flight 77 around 9:37 a.m. on that date sliced through three light poles in the Pentagon parking lot before slamming into the first floor of the building and exploding a fireball, instantly killing 125 people inside the Pentagon, plus all 64 passengers on board, including the five hijackers. So the attack by this plane that was commandeered by these five hijackers is a fact of American history. To make the record be clear on that, that yes, there was over 180 people that lost their lives, innocent people that lost their lives when these five hijackers forced that plane to crash into the first floor of the Pentagon on 9/11. I just want to clear that up, make sure everybody leaves with that understanding. But thank you all.
And one other thing, too, before you go. I understand what they're saying. I'm saying that when one look at that and one understand the principle of flights, especially with a commercial airlines, and you talk about it snapped off three light posts, which would be probably the equivalent of anywhere from 60 to 120 feet apart, in order to establish the bearing that was needed to have. You know, when you're landing at an airport under conditions called ILS, takes precise and coordinated flight. And the pilot that was supposed to have been flying the plane that ran into the Pentagon was a terrorist that had learned from simulators at a station there, I believe it was in Florida, if I'm not mistaken. You just don't do that. We're talking about some tough stuff. To make those turns that had to be made, a coordinated turn at the speeds that would have had to been done, I don't think that Calvin would have tried that, even maintaining flight level, which is about 60,000 feet. But for further discussion, thank you very much.
Well, we don't subscribe to QAnon theories. We don't subscribe to that, sir.
Warren, as I told you a long time ago, you can't miss nothing that you ain't never had. See you later.
You need to keep eating that yourself, sir.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone. We're going to close now. Thank you, everyone, for your...
Thank you, Mr. Watson.
Thank you for all of the great information that's been shared. Thank you for the cordiality that's been maintained, which is a keynote of our program, and it has been and will continue to be since we began the program. And thank you all on the Internet who have been listening. Hopefully, in the future, you will join us and you will participate by calling in and letting us hear your opinion. So God bless you all. And Stephanie, you had to go. She had to leave. Her battery on her phone went out. But we want to thank her, even though she can't hear us. But I will tell her that we definitely included her in our close out thanks. So God bless you all and good night as we close with our theme song, Lift Every Voice and Sing.